Ross Molin Podcast.
You better listen.
Welcome back to the Ross Bolin Podcast, otherwise known as RBP, presented by Bolin Media. I am your host, Ross Bolin, back again as always with your co-host, Chris Coles. Colson, Christopher, how are you?
Doing great, man. How about yourself?
It's a new month, Chris.
It is.
It's a new month.
We're back to March.
We are.
Made it a year.
New opportunities, new lease on life. We would normally spend more time bullshitting up top, but we've got a big show today with one of my all-time favorite guests, Arian Foster, a.k.a. Bobby Fino. Not only does he have a new podcast with PFT of Pardon My Take at Barstool Sports, but he also has a new album dropping as well. So we are diving right in to today's show. No time for distractions. RBP 376 is brought to you by Talkspace. The pandemic has obviously impacted everyone's mental health. Some of us are juggling childcare with working full-time in our homes, fighting with our partners more than usual. On top of all that, we're encountering unexpected job changes and challenges, and it's a lot to handle, even under normal circumstances, but it's especially grueling during a pandemic, and all of this leads to a crushing amount of stress, which is why I'm grateful that I have my Talkspace therapist who lets me vent anytime I want. Talkspace therapists give you the support you need to feel your best. Thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more. Your therapist can help set you up to achieve your goals, and you'll be amazed at how much progress you make each week that you attend therapy. For those of you who have never tried it, talk therapy by using Talkspace is phenomenally productive. I've spoken for many years now about psychiatry and therapy and how much both of them have been beneficial to me in my life. As you will hear from our guest today, that is also the case for him. Talkspace is a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. Instead of waiting for an appointment, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist 24/7. They'll engage you daily, 5 days a week. It's an amazing, amazing service. It's secure and private, using the latest end-to-end bank-grade encryption technology to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. They'll give you the practical guidance that you need to change your life for the better. I'm glad I found Talkspace. I'm glad I get to share it with y'all. And as a listener of this podcast, you'll get $100 off your first month with Talkspace to match with a licensed therapist today. Go to Talkspace.com or download the Talkspace app. Make sure to use the code RBP when you sign up to get $100 off your first month and show your support for our show. That's RBP, Talkspace.com, or download the app. Use the code RBP for $100 off your first month. Now it's time for some announcements and shouts. Happy birthday to Drew, coming up March 6th, turning 24. Happy birthday, Andrew, back on February 24th. He turned 26. Happy belated 21st to Josh Huber. If you want to watch episodes of our show, if you'd like to see Chris and I's faces, as well as that of our guest today, you can do that on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search the Ross Bolin Podcast and watch as many episodes as your heart desires. Speaking of which, we do a Monday show. We do a Wednesday show every single week on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on YouTube. But every Friday, we do an ad-free, premium, exclusive episode only for backers, supporters of this podcast, patrons on patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. If you'd like a third additional ad-free, premium episode each and every week, you can get it on Patreon, patreon.com/RossBolinPodcast. Is this from last week or this week that you're going to share a date story?
Oh, that was from like weeks ago that you've left in the rundown every single week.
Right on.
I was actually going to share it
But we still haven't gotten to it?
No, because the Texas freeze happened.
Cole's
we were stuck
date,
inside. Yeah, this was literally 3 weeks ago.
The freeze derailed us.
So my phone used to have a sound effect, right? Where to every time I would plug in my phone, it would say, "Oh, at least take me to dinner first."
Well, you said it to be.
I said it.
You didn't buy the iPhone, and it just that happened.
That's correct. Yeah. I said it to be that as a joke at first, and then I forgot to keep changing it. So I go on this date, and we're riding around in the car, listening to music. We had picked up some food, and I plug my phone in, and over the Bluetooth, The music stops, and it goes, oh, at least take me to dinner first. And she looked at me, and that's when I realized I wasn't going to get a second date because she now realized that I had created a sentient iPhone with a fear of anal.
With a two-hole joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that,
or one hole. It's a both hole joke.
It's a both hole joke.
Any holes, all three.
But yeah, there's my date story from 3 weeks ago that we're just getting to now.
We got it in. I'm glad I kept it on the outline.
Amen.
Now, it's time for today's show and our sole segment, Macro Dosing with Arian Foster. Today's guest is former Houston Texans Pro Bowl running back and now musician and activist, Arian Foster, otherwise musically known as Bobby Fino. He's been on our show twice before, episode 136, episode 322. Third time is the charm. Go listen to the first two guest spots, by the way, after today's show, if you haven't already, as they are some of the best guest spots we have ever had on the Ross Bolin podcast. Let's bring him in now, Mr. Arian Foster. All right, I'm going to jump right in if you're ready to rock.
Ready to rock.
Let's do it. Now we are joined by the former footballer known as Arian Foster, NFL legend, Pro Bowler, now known as Bobby Fino in the music realm. Sir, how are you on this fine Monday?
I'm chilling, man. Can't complain. I'm just in my lane and out the way is what I like to say.
I could complain. I will for you. Mr. Foster / Fino, you have a new podcast with PFT commenter of Pardon My Take at Barstool Sports titled Macro Dosing. It comes out every single Tuesday. Y'all are diving into, conspiracy theories, dark web stuff, whatever you happen to be obsessing over that week. And you dropped episode one last week, a deep dive into Alex Jones. It's a 1-hour and 54-minute pod about Alex Jones. It's hysterical and disturbing. Can you tell us a little bit about what you discovered about Alex Jones?
Yeah, man, it was weird, man. So so the pod's gonna be dope, man. PFT's a cool cat, and my man Tommy hooked us up and said we should do something. So I figured I ain't doing shit, so why not? But so the whole theme behind the pod is just what you said, like doing deep dives with like conspiracy theories or just interesting topics that kind of lead into a lot of speculation and conspiracies. But we started with Alex Jones, and Alex Jones is just an interesting cat, man. Found out a lot about him during the process. He's a weird dude, man. And I think he's like the epitome of what the internet is, right? The internet
is sure.
Like it gives you just enough information for you to speculate on, but there's not a lot of truth to what his claims are. And what's interesting about it is how big of a following he has and how it all started. Like he was like born to be this, and it's a fascinating look.
Have you watched that? You seen the video of him? And first of all, I believe he's an Austin, Texas guy, which is just another weirdo packed into the city that I live in. But have you seen the video of him when he chases that dude down the street, yelling at him and shit? Yep. It's like, it's not just the crazy stuff he says, right? It's also his whole look, everything about him, the way he talks, his stupid voice. It's all like a parody cartoon of someone doing like the news. But the thing that about him that's really fascinating to me, he's always just been this crazy dude on the internet spewing random conspiracy theories that a lot of people cling to. And obviously there's never been in my lifetime a more conspiracy theory friendly period of time. And all this shit we've seen with the Trumpers and the issues in 2020, a lot of that stuff, these people are sort of from that same vein. There, a lot of these people that became Trumpers were Alex Jones folks. A lot of the Q people, that's where they got their first taste of this conspiracy theory life. And this dude is a much more prominent figure in American society than I think a lot of people are willing to give him credit for. And the thing about him that's crazy, I can't tell if he believes his own shit or if it's all about money.
Yeah, no, I think he's a grifter. The interesting analogy that PFT gave was he was like, yo, he's either a conspiracy theorist and he believes this shit. And so he said he was either and if that was the case, if he believes this shit, he said he's either what did he call him? He said he's either coward or he's lying. I think it was one of those two. Right. Because if you believe that the deep state is trafficking children and like all this crazy shit he's saying, like, and you don't do anything about it, like, you're a coward. Like,
that's a fair point.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And so like when you start to break down like his claims, like what he does is like, this is why I said he's like the walking internet, because like what he does is like, he'll like his whole claim with that, to turning the frogs gay. Right. It sounds crazy on his head. But then like, when you look at the source of what he's actually talking about, it was a paper written, and how there was this chemical that was in the water that was, that turned a certain amount of frogs, it caused them to change their sex, but some right. amphibians are prone to that anyway. He was saying that not frogs, those specific frogs aren't prone to that. I haven't looked that deep into it, but I did read the paper, and the paper was basically saying like 1 out of 10 did change sex because of this chemical. And so he took that and said the frogs are gay. And then people like say, well, there is a little bit of truth to what he's saying. And then he has credence for every other thing that he pushes, like the Sandy Hook was a hoax thing. Like, so, and so it just breeds this misinformation cesspool. And that's basically what we have in America today.
And there's dudes like, obviously Alex Jones, a very prominent one, but one of the dudes that pops into my mind is Tucker Carlson on Fox. I don't know if you're familiar with dude, but he's the guy you always see pushing the most outrageous thing possible on Fox at this point. He's their go-to like bullshit dude, to the point that I think he was sued, and Fox argued that he was purely entertainment and surely no one could take this seriously, and they actually won. Yep. And he still gets to do his show every day and pump out this bullshit to our aunties and grandmas that, you know, that the deep state has rigged the entire country for the sake of like all this crazy shit. And with these guys, I'm like, I watched this video of Jon Stewart ripping Tucker Carlson to shreds face to face on his show. He used to be on CNN way back in the day before he was on Fox, which some people don't realize, Tucker Carlson. And he basically accused him of trying to destroy the country. And I believe this. These type of dudes, like Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson, who are allowed to just run rampant and under the name of entertainment, under the guise of entertainment, that they are some of the most dangerous people alive in America today.
100%.
Because they don't give a fuck about what they get other people to believe.
Right, right. Especially in when you're talking about like in media, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like that dude. It's all kind of under the same banner, right? If you look at like, because all these kind of political conversations all exist under the same umbrella. And so when you talk about like when hate speech was a big hot button topic, right? Mm-hmm. Hate speech is like, well, it's infringing on my freedom of speech and yada, yada, yada. We're like, bro, nobody says you can't say what you want to say, but there are consequences and repercussions to the things that you do say. Not everybody feels the same way about the things that you do. So you have to be cognizant of the information that you put out. And so these dudes are basically, they're like he said, Fox literally came out in a court document and said Tucker Carlson is a parody. It's entertainment. It's not real news. And they continue to play it, knowing people treat it as real news. And it's like that dude that's just talking shit to people. And at the end of the day, when he gets checked, he's like, I was just joking, man. It's
yeah.
Jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's not okay. Like, and to me, it's like, all right, if I'm Tucker Carlson, right? And if I let's say I believe this shit, right? Like, which I don't think they believe all of the shit that they do, but like, let's say that I do. I have a responsibility to fact check all my sources, to fact check all my things, because I have such a large following of millions of people that watch my show. The onus becomes on me to actually care about the information that I'm putting out there. And this is, to me, this is the bane of our society right now, is entertainment is now intertwined with news. And because this is a for-profit society, it's all about clicks. It's all about headlines. And so it's not going to be bland news. It has to be entertaining. And this shit is just, I don't see a remedy for it.
Let me ask you, you found, obviously, you know, you started gaming. You've been gaming hard on Twitch, as have we. You've been working a lot of Valorant. As Chris said off mic, you and him got a game in with me at one point. I saw you rocking Minecraft one day. But this is one of the places, Twitch, that you've used to really, like, it's the first place I saw you diving into this world of using your voice, your physical voice, to discuss and work your way through some of this crazy shit, right? So I guess the question is, how have you, in your journey to sort of doing your own fact-checking, trying to find new, trying to verify information for yourself, what have you found is like the best route to that on the internet, where I have to do the same thing every week, man, and it's really, really hard.
Right. And so the biggest advice I give to people, because I get that question a lot, right? The biggest advice I give to people is don't get emotionally invested or react to news that's breaking, right? If anything happens, just wait until either the data or the science or the facts have a chance to sit and have a chance to collect, because what this news cycle feeds off of is clickbait. It's just reactions and people saying, oh, I can't believe this, and bam, this is what happened, or this is what happened. And it's like, we don't know what happened. None of us were there, usually, right? And if you're not there, you don't know. So you have to make inferences off of the evidence presented to you. So it's just wait a little bit. Just don't react to things. Like, I'm like, even with all these, like, and granted, I'm definitely pro Black Lives Matter and all of that, but like, even with all like the police killings and stuff like that, I have to wait. I'm not a fan of it, trust me, but like, I have to wait. And when it's with the White House riots or the Kyle Rittenhouse stuff, like, just don't react. Just wait until the evidence. You can have an opinion. There's nothing wrong with having an opinion, but don't let your opinion be swayed by what you're reading or what you're seeing, because 9 times out of 10, your news feed is biased towards the
shit you already believe.
The information you already deem pertinent, and that's not. It's just a dangerous place to live.
That emotional reaction skews your judgment. Is a big part of it.
Oh, absolutely.
It, whatever you believed prior, when you've got that emotional reaction, is all your biases and shit come to the top, and it makes it difficult to be objective, which is a big part of the problem too when it comes to breaking news.
I mean, perfect example for something like that. I mean, just think about the election when you saw like that information spike of the 20,000 votes or whatever that came in Michigan.
Oh, yeah,
all these
people
wanted voter fraud to exist. They see that shit and immediately like, holy shit, look at this. But I want to say, Mr. Foster, in terms of your Twitch, I think it's really, really cool the way that you've been doing interviews on your Twitch and bringing people on to have these political discourses with them. And you were just talking in terms of patience. Your patience on there is very visible in the way that you you talk to people with, you know, different political beliefs. And I was just curious, you know, what was kind of your motivation when you first started these interviews? And then how has it been going? Have you felt that you've kind of been able to make an impact with both your viewers and with these people you've been interviewing?
Yeah. Do you like people more or less now?
Oh, the liking people is just on a steady decline. I don't think it's anything to do with Twitch. But I think I started Twitch, honestly, just to start playing Fortnite.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe like a year and some change ago.
Yeah.
And Fortnite's just not for me anymore. That game got really whacked.
I'm with you. I can't build.
Yeah. Well, I could build. The problem is it got too kiddish. Like, it's like for little kids.
It is.
I like shooter games that are like realistic, right?
Yeah.
With a little bit of sci-fi. That's why Valorant's my shit. But
right on.
I think my whole goal is when I reach out to somebody from opposite ends of the spectrum is I know like they're grown-ups, right?
Yeah.
It's rare that you're going to get a grown-up in the middle of a conversation to change their mind.
Oh,
they have
yeah.
to be extremely rational. They have to be they have to have a non-existent ego, or at least have it in check.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I've gotten my mind changed mid-conversation, but it's just a rare occurrence, especially in politics.
It's usually much later, to your point, that the things sink in, and then due to some circumstance, it'll click for you. Yeah.
Right. I think most logical people, if presented the correct evidence or whatever, you'll be like, no, you're right about that. But we get beholden to our beliefs. But so when I converse with people, my goal isn't to change their mind. My goal is there's people who are going to watch this, right? And they're sitting on the fence. And my goal is to say, okay, this dude has one side. I got one side, and we're arguing from different vantage points. If I come across clear, concise, logical, calm, and in a way that is like I said, it's logical how I got to the conclusion that I got to, then a rational human being would be like, hold on, let me rethink this, because that makes more sense than what I previously believed.
And again, not putting your emotions into it. It's you're stating facts, using logic and common sense to argue a point that it's irrefutable then. Because when it's not about your own emotions and your own personal bullshit, it just becomes about finding truth. And then that is an unignorable thing. You cannot ignore somebody who's spitting facts.
Perfect example. I was I was on Twitch with this he's like a MAGA rapper. He's a rapper that
this disturbed me a great deal.
Yeah, conservative values, right? And so we were having a conversation about masks. And he was saying they're inefficient. Uh-huh. It's crazy that masks are politicized, but it was like, he was saying they're inefficient. And I was like, okay, to what degree are they inefficient, right? Because that's a specific claim that you're making. And he was like, they just don't work. And I'm like, okay, well, what degree? Like, how much do they not work? Do they work at all? And he was saying, I don't think they work. I was like, okay, so if you're saying I'm wearing a mask and you're wearing a mask, the chances of our spreading it is 100%. Is that what you're saying? He was like, no, I didn't say that. I'm like, well, what are you saying? And when you start pinning them down on the yep. claims that they're actually making, they start to backpedal. And when that's what I look for, when you start to look at people or when you're dealing with people who aren't rational about their point, that's what they do. They'll either change the subject or they start to backpedal or they name call or whatever the case may be. And so that's literally how I got my political ideology. It's just claim after claim. I just beat myself up about it. I listened to the Ben Shapiro's. I listened to the Steven Crowder's. I listened to and I fact checked and I dug and I researched and I was like, okay, this is where I sit politically. Cause like I didn't care if I was right or wrong. Right. I cared about having my worldview being shaped by the truth and the reality that I occupy. And not everybody can do that. It's hard because you have to sit there and you have to listen and sort through. And it's not an easy thing to do. A lot of people don't have time to do that shit, honestly.
That too. But also, you end up facing things that are tough, man. Tough Absolutely. Truths about our society and about human beings, about our government, about our political system. It becomes daunting, really. And it's like that journey to understanding your world better can be a really painful one. I think that you found an incredible angle by sort of like, especially being a black man in America and having the ability to have a conversation with a MAGA rapper is not something that I would argue even most white people have at this point. Like, it's amazing to me that you have that patience and that you have that desire for understanding that it overrides your what would probably be an emotional, visceral, angry reaction to somebody like that. At least I think for most of us it would be, that we find these people to be sort of despicable, but they exist, and understanding them is important, right? Like, we can't just have however many million Americans, I hate saying the number because it pisses me off, but however many millions of Americans who are in this camp, like, something clicked for these people. We certainly need to figure out what the fuck it is. I wanted to ask you more about the pod before we move on past macro dosing. First of all, can you tell us what episode 2 is about, or is that like a secret thing?
No, we can't. I don't know if he would, but I don't really care.
Right on.
Because we recorded today, actually, and so it's going to be about Flat Earth. So we're going into like the Flat Earth.
Oh, God, yes. Kyrie's zone.
It's an interesting topic, man. I remember it's probably like 2 years ago, I got obsessed with it. Like, I never thought it was real, but I was just obsessed with how people came to this. Like, it was fascinating to me. And I took a deep dive back then, and I'm researching for this episode, it kind of just brings back all the holy shit, this is crazy.
Yeah, when I saw, man, that you and PFT were doing this, I was very excited because I was kind of waiting for either the opportunity to do it myself and try to help like harness this incredible voice and passion that you have, or hoping that somebody else would figure a way to do it. And honestly, that guy is just probably a perfect co-host. His whole career has been so weird. How well do you know him, PFT commenter, the man who never takes off his sunglasses?
Right. I've seen him with his glasses on.
Scary, huh? It's like seeing Diddy with his glasses on.
Right. We've talked like with acquaintances over the years. We have a mutual friend who's like a producer in Hollywood that does all these shows and connects all these people, and we've had dinners and stuff like that. Nothing like too in depth, but enough to know, like, you know, his politics, enough to know that he's a good dude, enough to know that he thinks I'm a good dude. And so, and also, like, he's fucking hilarious, and he's smart
yes.
as shit.
Yeah, that's one of the things people don't realize that listen to Pardon My Take is I will regularly hear PFT drop a joke that I'm like, I bet 95% of the people listening didn't get that. I bet they thought he was either serious when he was joking, or he's very, very good at that. It's a thing that, like, before he was even with Barstool, brought me to follow him on Twitter, was that he had this different version of wit that he could use with these dumbass jokes and all the misspellings that kind of, it disarms you almost, which makes him really good at talking about this kind of stuff that you're talking about as well. And their audience fascinates me because, look, I've dealt with a similar audience. It's like a mostly white audience, a lot of conservative dudes in the audience. Now, Barstool is obviously blown up to a degree that it's very, very, very big in mainstream and has a vast, incredibly diverse audience at this point. But it grew from that very white audience, like from a very conservative place, the same kind of audience that I had to deal with the first several years of my career. And watching the way those guys have been able to maneuver in that space into what I see now as a much more healthy, diverse voice that Barstool is bringing to the table, it's been cool. So to see you jump on board with them was, I was so pumped just because, like, it's a perfect idea, man. And that's exactly the kind of shit, like, I need to hear your takes on flat earthers and how you could possibly get to a place where you could believe that. Last question on macro dosing would be, what is the conspiracy theory that is the craziest one that you buy or that you put some stock in? Because you got to have at least one at this point.
Right, right.
Or what's the one you're willing to admit live on the air?
one that I used to believe that I no longer believe was the 9/11, that the government did 9/11. I no longer believe that one. But one that I think has credence is that the FBI had a hand in killing either Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, or both.
Or both.
That's actually really interesting you brought that up. I had in my notes, and I talked to Ross off mic about that. Did you see that the family of Malcolm X released that letter from a former NYPD officer that died in November of 2020 saying that he was part of the plot to murder Malcolm X, to assassinate Malcolm X? It was basically his job to round up his security team and falsify felonies for them to put them behind bars to make it easier to assassinate Malcolm X. I believe this came out like a week and a half ago or so.
What the fuck?
And so
I didn't see that. I gotta check that out. I'm gonna Google that after this.
Yeah, you definitely should. It's really, really interesting there. And then also, the timing is fascinating too, with the release of this and the release of Judas and the Black Messiah so recently, kind of showing that, you know, the state has done this. The state has, the state assassinated Fred Hampton blatantly.
Yes.
And
we know that to be true. Yeah.
Exactly. And if we had if there's evidence tying them to Malcolm X as well, and then it's not a far reach to say it happened to MLK too. MLK's own family believes that Earl, I think, who was the person who assassinated MLK? James Earl or something like that?
Yeah, I forget his name.
The family of Dr. King has stated the entire time that they believe that he played no role in it at all. They think it's been the state the entire time.
Right. I mean, he was literally, his phones were being tapped by the FBI. Uh-huh. They were keeping tabs on him. I think it was
James Earl Ray.
James Earl Ray.
There you go. I think it was J. Edgar Hoover that deemed Martin Luther King one of the most dangerous men in America, threats to America. And so these kinds of things are factually based in documents. And so I can't come out and say yes, they did it, but I know for a fact every black movement in America, like even my sister, right? My sister's an activist in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. She's on the FBI watch list. Merely for doing activism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's this American government deems black liberation as a threat to society.
Watching Judas and the Black Messiah was the first time I'd ever kind of revisited that concept. And I mean, this that one is so point blank with Fred Hampton that there's no even pretending that he wasn't just straight up murdered by our government.
Yeah. Yeah.
And only on the basis of what you just spoke to. Essentially, he had different beliefs than the people in power, and they saw him as a threat, and that he was going to somehow, you know, like, arm black America to rise up and take Whitey out or some shit. Like, that is literally the ultimate fear of what you see, these behind the doors meetings in the movie. Obviously, it's fictionalized for the sake of narrative or whatever, but man, they were freaked out. And this dude was like 21 years old. So to think that they wouldn't be even more freaked out by an MLK, by a Malcolm X, and potentially remove somebody like that is pretty obvious at this point. Like,
Mr. Hampton specifically, J. Edgar Hoover, he was another one that said he was one of the biggest threats to American society because he not only brought black people together. He brought white people together with black people, with Puerto Ricans, basically all poor people of Chicago together in a socialist coalition as the Rainbow Coalition. And they were successful in what they were doing. They were
successful, man.
We just watched the movie.
And I've been, after I watched the movie, I realized that I did not know nearly enough about Fred Hampton. I've been watching a lot of his speeches.
Yeah. Well, I said, the only thing I knew about him was from Kanye lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, it's
they didn't teach us about Fred Hampton in right.
Hell
school,
no.
Man.
I'm from North Carolina.
This is the big thing that we're always saying, right? So, like, you know, there's a lot of like white folks or just conservatives. It's not just purely white, but people who say, "Why is there Black History Month?" Well, for shit like this.
Yeah,
I didn't learn about no Black Panthers in Black History Month. I didn't learn about Fred Hampton. I didn't learn about Marcus Garvey. I didn't learn about a whole Sada Shakur. I didn't learn about a lot of these people that were instrumental in the liberty of Black folks in America. I was taught to me from my father and from my people. But they were absolutely incremental in the liberation of Black folks in America, and it's always interesting seeing people learn this information for the first time.
Yeah.
Because it's like y'all's reaction was probably, well, I don't know if it was, but my reaction was I was angry.
I was pretty blown away.
Yeah, because like these kinds of things are part of our history. And I said this on Part of My Take, right? And this is hard for white folks to relate to. Like, if you was to go look at your family history and look at where the Bolins come from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can see that. You can go look and you'll see with the family crest and you'll see where your lineage comes from.
Yep.
Like, Black folks in America, there isn't that for us. That we can't, that it's cut off. I don't know where my people originate from, right? Best thing you could do is do a DNA test, and I don't advise doing that, giving your DNA to people. But that's the best we could do is a DNA test, right?
And right,
so
right, right.
And so my lineage and my people, my history as a human being is Black history in America. Mm-hmm. That is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And so Jim Crow, black clothes, slavery, all of this stuff is very real to me. And just because we don't experience it in the same way that we did back then, that we do today, doesn't mean it doesn't exist in our ethos, because that's who we are. It's a part of us as Black folks in America.
RBP376 is also brought to you by MyBookie. You've heard the name just about everywhere. MyBookie.ag, the industry's leading online sportsbook and casino. Thousands of lines to bet on all your favorite sports teams in every single sport. NBA, college ball, they've got it all. MMA, soccer, the latest odds, period. At MyBookie.ag, take advantage of their prop builder and live in-game betting. If you miss puck drop or tip-off or first serve, you can still get a bet in. They've got live in-game betting where every single throw, run, and touchdown or basket is another chance for you to put cash in your pocket. You visit their friendly mobile website today. Receive a deposit match when you use the promo code RBP when you make your first deposit on MyBookie.ag. Stipulations apply. The best part is they make it simple with a variety of ways to deposit instantly, including credit card, bank transfer, Bitcoin, and more. Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or your phone, it's not too late to make bank today, tonight, this week, this month, every day, Coles. With MyBookie.ag, you bet, you win, and you get paid at MyBookie.ag. Use the code RBP when you sign up and make your first deposit today. Well, let me ask you then, as a black man in America who speaks on things that are, you know, deemed by some to be controversial, and speaking on, you know, Fred Hampton and so many black leaders who have been taken from us, does it freak you out at all? Like, when you lay this shit out there that you don't, you know, you obviously don't agree with a lot of what our politicians do, as many of us don't, but does it freak you out at all to know that there could be some recourse to that?
No, I think the recourse would happen if... Well, I think it will eventually when I do what I'm planning to do, right? The reason why...
That sounds dangerous.
The reason why America deemed Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Black Panthers and all these black leaders a threat is because they were a threat to the economy. They were a threat to the system that is capitalism, okay? Now, if you look at Martin Luther King, they love to quote him every Martin Luther King Day, right? But they never quote all of his stuff. He was a democratic socialist. Mm-hmm. He was not a big fan of free markets, right? Black Panthers, they started socialist programs, free breakfast, free education, free healthcare, all of this stuff, right? So these kind of things are a direct threat to the system that is America, that is tied. All of our politicians are tied to big corporations,
like you said, for profit
and money. Yes, duopoly. For profit.
Yep.
Yes, they are beholden to them. It's why when I'm talking shit about Trump on the internet, they'll be like, "Oh, well, Joe Biden is this and that," and I'm like, "Yo, fuck Joe Biden. I don't care that.
Yeah.
He's just a Trump light, in my opinion, because he's beholden to these companies, right? Mm-hmm. And he's done some good things, right? But he literally just bombed Syria. It's the same shit. America is a warmongering country. But anyway. The reason why I feel like I'm not a threat in their eyes is because I don't yield any power economically, right? I have money, but I don't yield any power to change the economics of our country. They started movements to do that, to change people's minds. Now, what I plan to do is start a worker co-op in the next few years, which is basically giving workers access to the means of production, right? So they have ownership in the company as well as the ownership. And this is the scary shit, the spooky scary shit that conservatives like to propagandize is.
Yep.
They say, oh, you're a communist. Oh, you're a socialist. They don't make this socialism. All it is workplace democracy, right? I mean, you can get into the nuances, but that's all it is. It's workers having rights. It's unionizing.
Yes.
It's people standing up against big corporations who are fucking the worker. And this is the hilarious shit about conservatives. It's like, we're for the working person. We're for the working person. But they want to give them living wages. They don't want to give them health care. Like, well, you're not for the working person. You're for free market capitalism, which is basically just ownership fucking workers. That's basically it.
That's a fucking brutal, brutal explanation, but very spot on. This is related. Another thing people may not know about you is that you are now a full blown combatant in the mental health war.
Yeah.
You're on team like panic attack now.
it's not a fun team to be on.
It's not the best team, but we're out here and we're doing our fucking best. I realize that a lot of the anxiety and the stuff that you've dealt with mentally over the past couple years is tied to this shit. I mean, it's really difficult to dive down into the depths of the country and the society that you're in and find all this fuckery, for lack of a better word. It's just really hard. It's heartbreaking, man. Especially, I mean, I know, Arian, you and I have two very different versions of America that we grew up in, but look, the same heartbreak incurs when you find out the truth. And for me, it was brutal from another level, from another place, like to find out that the whole thing was a lie and that it was built for me and that other people are not benefiting the way that I am and that this shit is wacky, was really, really difficult. But I know it impacted my mental health is what I mean to say, that it's definitely been something over the past couple of years that has given me more anxiety and made me, it's hard to look inward, man, and face the truth. And that shit can be terrifying for you. Like, how have you learned to live with that side of it as you explore all this and yourself and this world post NFL where you've like you said, and you've admitted, I mean, you've got a little bit of money and it gives you more time to do the things you want to do.
Mm-hmm. So I think, how all of that ties in with my anxiety is, I have to disconnect a lot. I have to just kind of go off the grid and just get away and put my phone down, and because you can get lost in it, right? Where it's like, I was saying this the other day, man. Where it's like the civil rights movement, right? We look back on it like every single day, people were getting murdered, babies was getting thrown, like cops was like it was a regular day in America, but there was just in heightened racism, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit hyperbolized. Don't get me wrong. I will never minimize what happened to my people in this country, but people still went on their day-to-day business. They laughed. They had jokes. They had drinks. They enjoyed each other. Right? They had happy times. It wasn't just despair, right?
Absolutely.
100%. And so I think that's what, if you don't disconnect, that's what you'll get caught in that, and you'll get in a depressed state, because I'm already a pessimist, right? I don't think that human being, and it sounds like a joke, but I don't think that human beings are after the same things that I am, right? I'm after happiness. I'm after peace, right?
Purpose.
Well, you're not wrong at all. Most human beings are not after the same thing you and I are at all.
Yeah, and I think that's why I'm a pessimist. I don't think, like when I day to day, right? You'll see people like always arguing or complaining about the USA or the world and how there's hunger or there's war, right? and it's poverty. I'm like, well, you have war in your life. You go to war with people every single day over petty shit, right? Squash those beefs, be peaceful, be diplomatic, and then your world can start to change. And you can start to try to view the world a little differently. So how does it affect my mental health is it's I've grown to be apathetic. It's not the best thing with personal relationships, but as far as like the world news, like we're all desensitized to like violence and gore and blood and negative shit. I've just grown to be apathetic. If you, it's like you know the Green Mile. You remember the Green Mile?
Oh, with hell John Coffey? Man. Hell yeah, it's a sad movie.
He took all that pain in, and it and it fucks with him, right? It fucks with him. So you have to learn how to disassociate your emotions, and it's hard if you care about it. Like I do, but you have to dissociate your emotions with everything that's going on, or else you'll literally drive yourself crazy.
Holy shit, I just realized that whole deal in the Green Mile could have been like an analogy for an empath.
Yeah.
The type of person who sucks in all the emotion and the shit of the world, which is what I am, and it's awful. But I'm learning to deal with it. Have there been any positive takeaways for you, man? Because as I always tell people, like when I started having panic attacks, you know, it's been over a decade for me now, unfortunately. But when I started having them, it shifted my whole life. My whole worldview changed. And it really has been, at the end of the day, through all the suffering and the you know, 500 times I thought I was going to die and all the hospital trips and shit, it's been a huge positive for me. And it's enabled, I mean, really, it's given me my career for me. It's a different path than most people who have this shit get, but I got really lucky where it's, no, this is like my passion now. This is the thing I do. I open up about my personal mental health struggles and talk to people about theirs in an effort to relate that shit to more and more people, because as you know, most people don't talk about this stuff. And there are a lot of people who suffer in silence and they go their whole lives and they lose their fucking minds and they're miserable. And that's not right. We want people to have peace and find happiness and joy. So have there been any positive, you know, takeaways that you can point to already? Like this is a direct result of my suffering because of this anxiety.
Yeah, 100%, man. So when I remember when I first had my panic attack and I thought I was having a heart attack, the doctors came over, or the paramedics, we called the paramedics, because I was like, oh shit, I'm about to die. Like literally thought this is it. Like I had thoughts, and this is how I know, like, you know how they, there's that old saying that religious people like to say, so for people that don't know, I'm an atheist, but so for religious people.
Stop the interview. Stop the interview. No, go ahead.
So, you know, religious people say, you'll never find an atheist in a foxhole. Meaning like if your life is on the line, like you'll believe. Well, this is how I know I'm really an atheist. Cause I was literally, it feels like somebody's sitting on your chest. And my limbs started going numb. Right. And you could feel it like creeping up all the way my arms, and it went into my jaw, and I'm locked up. I'm like, I can't move. And I remember thinking like, damn, this is it. Like, and I like my kids ran through my mind. And I remember thinking like that I won't exist anymore. Like, I remember vividly thinking this, but anywho, when I had my first one, and the paramedics came and they were like, hey man, you got better blood pressure than me. I think you're going to be okay, man. We think you're having a panic attack. And I was like, what? Panic attack? I thought that was just people worrying. I thought it was just people worrying about stuff. And I was like, nah, man, this is like, it has a lot of the same physical symptoms as a heart attack. We get a lot of these calls. And so, immediately when that happened, and I had subsequent ones, right? Because they kind of like feed off of each other.
Yep. There's like after tremors, like you have like little ones as a result of that big one. I mean, I still argue to this day that maybe every single attack I've had since my first one is a result of the first one. Anyway, go ahead.
It could be. What it really gifted me was empathy. Because for so long, mental health was like, yo, you got to push through that shit. You
got to be a pussy.
Just stop complaining, bro. One of my family members, one of my best friends, had dealt with some mental health issues that in the past I shrugged off like, bro, you're just dramatic as fuck. And I told him that, and it was so dismissive. But that's,
I feel like that's a bigger issue in the Black community. I feel like it's a more fresh thing, man. Like,
I think it's just
for lack of a better way of putting it, Black people have had a lot of shit to worry about, frankly.
Right.
And
it's new.
Yeah.
I think we haven't in the past had an outlet to express our emotions. And I think, yeah, there's an aspect to it, to the Black community, but I think more so it's really a male gender thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Whereas in our culture, it's just deemed like you soft if you express yourself
weak.
Emotionally.
Suck it up and
yeah,
be a man.
Soft. And what this allowed me to do was take a step back from my worldview and say, my God, dog, there are people suffering from shit like this and shit that I don't understand or can't relate to. And I need to be more open and to listen to people. And it just it opened me up to an entire world of pain and suffering emotionally that I had never even given a thought to. It allowed me to dig into myself a little more, a little deeper, deal with my issues, because what's causing this stuff? You know, I figured I have a few triggers, but you know, when certain things are happening in my life, these things become more prevalent. So it's dealing with past traumas that I just swept under the rug because I thought I got over because I was strong. It's dealing with family issues. It's dealing with day-to-day relationships, dealing with your partners, dealing with your kids, dealing with all of that stuff, man. And it's really taking a look along. It allowed me to take a long look at my life, the shit that I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
The man that I was, the man that I want to be, and put all that in front of me and say, let's deal with it. Let's talk about it. And that was a powerful gift that was bestowed upon me.
RBP 376 is also brought to you by Quip, makers of the greatest toothbrush and oral care products in all the land. Longtime supporter of this podcast. And now you won't believe this, Chris, but they make the greatest gum I have ever tasted. You will believe it, actually, because you have the gum. You've tasted it with me.
Yes, it's quite delicious. Nice, like, crunchy outer shell.
Oh, yeah.
Juicy inner shell.
Mm. And the packet, the thing that you get to carry it in, this little, like, it's almost like, you know, one
Pez
of those
dispenser.
Candy toys you had when you were a kid that dispenses candy. And gum, it turns out, is the unsung hero when it comes to better oral health. The American Dental Association recommends chewing sugar-free gum for 20 minutes after meals. It's something people chew as a way to relieve stress, curb appetites, and most importantly, freshen breath. But many people don't realize that gum can be an integral part of your healthy oral care routine. That's why Quip finally reinvented gum the same way they reinvented the toothbrush for the modern age. And they've launched a new gum that's actually good for your oral health. It comes with a dispenser, like we said, that's amazing. It's freaking awesome. Sugar-free, tooth-friendly, satisfies your taste buds. Incredible long-lasting mint flavor, crunchy tri-layer design, stamped it all with the classic Quip tongue. It's phenomenal. The slim travel-ready dispenser is available in 5 colors. You can get metal or plastic and packs and protects up to 10 pieces of gum at a time. Spread good oral health habits this year. Join over 5 million mouths already using Quip and get chewing for less than $2 per gum pack. If you go to getquip.com/RBP right now, you can get a free plastic dispenser with any refill plan. That's a free dispenser at getquip.com/RBP, spelled GETQUIP.com/RBP. Quip, the good habits company. I've got a tough one to close out the sort of mental health side of this, man. It's I started dating this amazing woman who's got a 2-year-old girl. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have kids, man. I've never had to consider how my mental struggles, my anxiety, my panic attacks, my depression, all the shit that I fight, how it would affect or impact a child. And more recently, like, I've had a couple of bouts where, you know, like, I was holding her. She was sitting next to me on the couch a couple of days ago watching Daniel Tiger or whatever the fuck. And I had a little moment where I was, you know, I was crying because I was depressed. It had nothing to do with her. It had nothing to do with anything in reality, really. It was just a straight up, this is a thing that, you know, I fight every day. That sometimes I don't know why it hits me and it just does. And that's depression and it fucking sucks, and shouts to everybody who deals with that shit. But my question is, how do you explain it to your kids, man? When you're having a tough day mentally, how do you frame that up in a way that your children, they can understand, so it's not, they're not worried about daddy, right? And then B, did they know it's not their fault that they don't have to carry it with you?
Right. So, I mean, this is actually due to me too, because it also, you talk about some of the positives that came from it. It also allowed me to be a way better father. I don't think I gave my children the best prior to the last year, Like, I just don't. Like, I just wasn't in a good space. I was in a whirlwind from coming down the high of being on the NFL and then the depression from that dream ending to just everything. It was just, I just wasn't in a good space until I really just started to dig into who I wanted to be as a human. And so one thing that it allowed me to do was be emotionally available for my kids. And so if how I would deal with that situation is I've cried recently in front of my little daughter, my little three-year-old. I've cried recently in front of her and and I don't know where she got this from. I have no idea, but it really hit me how much we affect our kids' lives. She came up and I was crying and she said, "Oh my God, it's all my fault." And I was like, "I don't even know where you learned that verbiage from. Like, who says that as a three-year-old?" And I just reassured her. I said, no, sweetie. I said, "It's okay to cry. This daddy's just crying. You can cry. Mommy can cry. Everybody can cry. Crying is good. It helps you out." Like,
fuck,
just,
man, you're gonna make me cry.
encouraging people to express their emotions, especially young people, like boys, because earlier on, like I said, like my boys would fall, or my boys would they would cry, and I'd be like, "Hey, bro, suck that shit up." Right. And then this epiphany that I had was like, that's so toxic. That's the most toxic shit in the world. Like, go ahead and cry, bro. It's all right. Like, I used to get mad when they used to, cause I have different baby moms. And so, they used to come over and they used to say, "I miss my moms." And I used to be like, "Well, she's not here."
Yep.
It is what it is. You're here now, which I thought that was like, oh, I'm toughening them up.
You're getting them to skip that pain somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in reality, what I was doing was I was helping them learn how to suppress their emotions.
Which leads to, one day, your first fucking panic attack.
Exactly. That's the gift I give them, right? And so now how I dealt with it was I sit down and talk to them. I was like, "Well, you miss mommy? Well, what do you miss about mommy?" And then I go through it with them. Let's, you know what I'm saying? I understand you miss mommy. But she's not here right now. And you're with dad from this place to this life, but it's okay to miss mommy. You know, I miss my mom and my mom's not here either. And so you kind of relate to them and do your best to talk with them. And it's just, it's a better space to be, man, because I think everybody wants to be peaceful and everybody wants to be about love. And we all mm-hmm. write the quotes and we all love the posts. And it's like, but once you actually start doing work to be that, like, it's just a really peaceful place to be.
Well, all right. Go ahead, Chris.
You said when you first started dealing with panic attacks and anxiety, you really started to kind of look in the mirror and all this past trauma started to resurface. You kind of look back at points in your childhood, points in your life, and you're like, "Oh shit,
I never dealt with this.
That's where this came from. That's why I feel the way I feel." And so I just want to say it's fucking awesome that you've taken the time to reevaluate your actions as a father to include that empathy, but you're making all the difference in the world for those children. Like, those moments and conversations are shit that'll stick with them for their entire lives and, like, will change them emotionally and lead to a better future generation.
But for real, I was a joke, but it wasn't a joke. Like, that thing you just described that we have done for generations and generations and generations in America, especially, suck it up, get you fucking skinned your knee, get all, you miss your mom, like, suck it up. That whole thing, bro, that is exactly what leads to dudes like you and me.
Yeah.
Having this mm-hmm. bullshit that we have, these panic attacks, is because you suppress years and years and years and years and years and years of shit. Like, when my parents got divorced, this is so lame, but it's true. When my parents got divorced when I was like 15 or some shit, look, I had experienced zero issues in my whole fucking life up until that point. None. I had no idea what struggle or pain or suffering looked like at all. And then I was like, oh, man, everybody's parents are divorced. This is a stupid little thing. It's silly for me to even, like, trip on this. And that was a bullshit lie I fed myself. I was in deep, deep pain. It fucked me up. That was the only version of pain I had ever dealt with. Circumstantially, the fact that other people had dealt with worse stuff didn't matter. This was about me, and I didn't deal with it. Instead of dealing with it, instead of facing it down, I got fucked up for like 10 years. And I mean, on, you know, drugs and alcohol. And then as a result of that, if you suppress deep pain and suffering and confusion and frustration every single day by drinking, smoking, distracting yourself with whatever the fuck, eventually there is an explosion. That stuff has to get out. Yep. And whether it's a violent act or a panic attack, frankly, I think we got the best possible version, you and I. It's the most productive one.
Man, my best friend, he's from Uganda, country in East Africa, and he grew up in like the Idi Amin regime, like a real dictator.
Yeah, I've seen Hotel Rwanda. Was it
right?
Yeah,
I haven't seen the movie, but I mean, there are places in Africa that are dictatorial, and they ravaged by poverty, and it's you know, there are pockets of Africa that are really bad. But anyway, he grew up in there. He got political asylum when he was, I think, 12, and he came to America. And it's to your point. This is the one thing that I learned from him. So he used to like walk 5 miles for water and shit like that. He used to, you know, he dealt with a political regime that has killed his family members. He's dealt with poverty. He's had malaria twice. Like he's just dealt with an entirely different circumstance than I grew up with in America. Mm-hmm. Right. I had poverty, but this is first world poverty. It's mm-hmm. different.
It's a whole nother level.
Yeah. And so I remember talking to him one time. I was like, dog, I don't even feel like I should be having shit to complain about, man. Cause like coming from where you come from and you're as happy as you are. Like, I feel like I shouldn't even have like nothing to complain about. And he was like, fuck that. He was like, don't ever minimize your pain. Why would you minimize? You went through what you went through, and that caused you a certain amount of suffering. He's like, and that's okay. That's relevant. It matters. He's like, but don't ever minimize your pain, you know, when you compare it to somebody else. And that shit was powerful coming from him, who has been through real shit.
Suffering is relative, though. It's relative to all of us. Yeah.
Yes, 100%, 100%.
By the way, Last King of Scotland, I'm an idiot. I said Hotel Rwanda. The Last King of Scotland is the one that's about the dictator in Uganda.
Oh, Idi Amin, yeah. I didn't ever watch either one. So.
It's a good movie, man. I highly recommend Last King of Scotland. Forest Whitaker won Best Actor for it.
Okay, Forest Whitaker. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like him. He has a dope movie there that I watched the other day that I fucking love, dog. It's called Arrival.
Oh shit! Oh, yes, yeah, dude. Arrival was amazing.
Fantastic.
I love that movie, man.
It was amazing. I know you've got time, you know, a limited amount of time you can share with us today. So I want to get to your album quickly before you head out. You've got a new album coming out. As I mentioned at the top of the show, people may not realize this. You are a musician, a hip hop artist, a rapper, under the name Bobby Fino, and you're two albums deep. This is your third album that's upcoming. I've gotten to listen to it for a little over a month now and familiarize myself with it. It's amazing. It's obviously the next progression in your career as a music maker. And I want to, first of all, congratulations. But then I want to ask you, what inspired the third album and when does it drop?
I think I've been making music since I was 12. I've recorded thousands of songs, and so I was always going to make music. I always am going to make music in some kind of capacity.
So it wasn't like it just came out of nowhere after football. You were like, I'm rich, I could be a rapper.
No. I literally in 2011, I don't remember how I got word got around, but like Bun B heard that I made music. And he was like, word? He's like, well, come through the studio. And so me and him have like a couple songs together. Like, this is like in 2011. Yeah.
Are they out? Like, can I find them?
No. I ain't going to release
them. Can you
tell
me?
Nah.
This is like Ross's wet dream.
I ain't proud of them Jones. He snapped, but I wasn't where I needed to be.
All right, fair enough.
But anywho, so I've been making music forever. And so, but the one thing that I could never do was I felt like I couldn't give like a music project the love that I wanted to, like really be diligent and really, cause like I'm involved in every track, like with the production, I'm involved with like the arrangements and stuff like that. Like all that shit matters to me. Like I understand music is moving towards quantity. I don't do this for a paycheck. I just do it because I love it. And like some people relate, and that's to me, the beauty of art. And so this next project, what inspired it was just continuing to grow as an artist, just kind of putting together a collection of songs that I felt like, you know, represented me at the time. And even like some of these songs are like 2 years old, a year old. I've just been sitting on it. And hopefully, what I want to do is put out another project at the end of this year. But we'll see how it goes.
RBP 376 is also brought to you by ShipStation. If you sell stuff online, you're definitely in the right business. More people are shopping online than ever. That means a lot of orders coming in and a lot of orders you'll need to ship out fast, which is why online sellers like you need ShipStation. No matter how much you sell, ShipStation makes it super easy to manage and ship all your orders from all your sales channels cheaper and more efficiently. You can import orders from any sales channel, ship with any carrier using their deeply discounted rates, automate just about any shipping task. With ShipStation, you'll spend a lot less time on shipping and a lot more growing your business, which is why they have so many five-star reviews, more than any other shipping software, no matter where you're selling, whether it's Amazon or Etsy or your own website. ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making it really, really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. They work with all the major carriers, USPS, FedEx, UPS. You can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. It's amazing. And now any business can access the same discounts usually reserved for large Fortune 500 companies. You'll always know that you're getting the best deal when you use ShipStation, the number one choice of online sellers. Ship more in less time with some of the best rates available anywhere. Just use the offer code Ross at ShipStation.com. 60-day free trial. That's 2 months free of no-hassle, stress-free shipping. Just go to ShipStation.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the page and type in Ross. That's ShipStation.com. Enter offer code Ross. ShipStation. Make ship happen. You know how I know, like, good music is, it's always, like, a really big leading indicator for me is, like, does this translate years from now into stuff that's happening then that this artist didn't even know about when they wrote these songs? And I was listening to, I can't remember if it was album one or two from you the other day, but there were multiple lines, and I mean, this has been, you know, discussed time and again. Hip-hop as a whole has just really been representative of how little progress there's been in some arenas. And it was like, there was a line in one of your songs that I was like, fuck, dude, if you told me that came out in 2021, I would have believed it. If you told me it came out in 2020, I would have believed it. And that's what, to me, like, if music, no matter when it was made, if I can apply it to what's going on in my life today and it can make me feel and think, then you've won. And that's a thing that you've really accomplished with your rhymes, just like with your media persona, if you want to call it that. Just you, and it's just you, man. That's one of the things I like about you, is when I talk to you, I don't feel like I'm getting some polished, practiced version that's for the camera or the microphone or whatever. You tell me what you feel, and you're honest, and you open yourself up to people to try to better everybody's experience, which is my whole fucking thing too, and I love that. We have a lot in common in that realm. But music is the thing that I will always be like most. You know how every NBA player wants to be a rapper?
Yeah.
And every rapper wants to be an NBA player.
Yep.
I will always want to be a musician on some front. I never learned I learned how to play the piano. I know how to play. I'm a little teapot. That's the only song I can play on the piano. But music, and Chris and I have spent a lot of time talking about this, because you can get on stage and you perform and you have this influence, this power to help all of these people in the crowd, everybody reacting to you, and that, you know, it's the same thing that I hope I get out of doing my show, but it's another layer. It's a whole nother level with music and the art that it brings to the table.
I've said it a couple times before, but I'm so passionate about music and film because they're one of the only two tools that I know of that have the ability to change human emotion literally instantly, in the snap of a finger. Mm-hmm. And the thing I love about your music is what Ross was saying, is it's timely yet timeless at the same time. And it's really apparent that you don't do it for the paycheck, because there's so much care in all of your songs and the lyrics and the weight that they hold. You make the music for, like, basically to be able to change the emotion, to change lives, and it's very apparent through the music. So I can't wait to hear the third album.
Do you have
heard
any
anything from it yet?
Do you have any features? Anybody else you're looking forward to working with, like, coming up? Or are you just focusing on doing you?
I would love to work with people, man, but it has to be organic, right?
It
has
okay,
to be
so you don't want to force that, like, it.
Nah, I don't think. Like, I have a song that I know Nas would go perfect on, right? But like, who know, he's busy and he has a reputation to keep, and you know, I get it, because I know some people reach out to me for like, yo, how much for a feature? And I'm like, I don't charge people for features, bro. I'm not a mainstream artist like that. Like, I was like, send it, and if I fuck with it, I'll rock with it. It's about the feel for me. It's not about the anything else. And so I would love to work. I mean, I have a list of artists I would love to work with, but I mean, chances of that happening isn't too high. Like, there's not a lot of, like, you know who did reach out was like Sci-Hi the Prince.
No shit.
We trapped it. So he's on number 10. He's on track.
Oh, yeah,
10.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
On, yeah. He's on Crack Era. And so I had a song that was like, I wanted somebody who was like, you know, of the street cloth, but like intelligent enough to speak on the other side of crack and what it did to our communities. And so we have a song called Crack Era with Sci-Hi. And I just think it's a dope track. And so like stuff like that, like I have no interest in being on the radio. I have no interest in being in the club. Or
so it's got to be like, for a reason. It's not going to be you like, oh, I got to get fucking Young Thug on a song.
Nah.
You know, okay.
And respect the Young Thug, respect the Autumn.
Absolutely.
Artists, Lil Baby, whatever. But I say, I don't make that kind of music. I make music like those like fans of that music would call conscious rap, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I care about the words I'm writing. I care, but not to say they don't, but it's like, I put stock into the message that is being delivered. Like I get it. I listen to turned up music too. Like I'm not a fucking monk, but it's just not. It's not some shit I would create. Like I don't get inspired by that. Like I zone out to that. I'll get faded and throw a track on. Like I'm not gonna get inspired by that shit though.
When does the album come out, man?
So I wanna do March, but I wanna have a video done. But I'm unsure if I'm gonna have. So I'm kind of on the fence. It's either gonna be March or April, but it's definitely coming out
in the next couple of months. So you got a title yet?
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Bohemia.
Bohemia.
Hell yeah.
Bohemia.
The way you were just talking about making music and who you make music for, it almost was reminiscent to me right there of like 60s counterculture rock a little bit. How it's just like making music just for the message of the music and nothing else.
See, that's a great point, but it's the reason why, like, so when people... You people scoff at like somebody who says, yo, I rap. And be like, oh, everybody raps.
Sure.
Right? Another rapper.
People scoff at that. And that shit blows my mind, right? Not because I rap, but because like I remember in the 50s, like in the 60s, everybody had a doo-wop group. In the 70s, everybody had a rock band. In the 80s, everybody was rapping. In the 90s, everybody, right? But what does that mean? All that means is there are millions of people who want to express themselves, mm-hmm. and this is a venue that they choose or their venue that they're inspired by. So we scoff at people trying to express themselves. And granted, if you look at Louis Armstrong, who's one of the greatest musicians of all time, and he said, first you imitate, then you create, right? And so not everybody's going to be the greatest artist of all time, the first shit that they drop. So, but we have to constantly step on people's shit because this shit whack, or that shit trash, or this classic. Like it's just like we're just drowning in these fucking opinions, right? But I always say, like, dog, listen, like go express yourself however you want to express it. Like I'll give you, listen, I swear I've found two or three artists that are in my regular rotation that they have less than 1,000 plays on Spotify.
No shit.
A lot of them. All the time. There's a cat that it was probably like 6-7 years ago, I was at a gas station, and he was like, "Yo, man, this is my mixtape, man. Let me give it a spin." I was like, "Bet." I threw it in the trash. I fucked with it. Found him on social media. Started following him, and he's doing well for himself. And so it's like he didn't have no following, but he was out there pushing. I respected the grind, but I will give anybody a listen because it's like, who am I to sit here and judge? Like, you have to. I have a metric for. The quality I have to listen to. Like I don't like, artists are great. I know, and this is maybe a little egotistical, but this is how I feel. Maybe every artist should feel like this. I make like quality music. I don't have near the audience for my music that I think I deserve. I think every artist should feel like that, but it's not. I don't care about that shit, right? And so I know if I feel like that about myself, I know there's other artists out there who make great music who don't have an audience. So it's like, I'm just out here searching for inspiration. And so I don't care where it comes from. I need to find it. And so I found plenty of artists like that.
Damn. You need to get that dude on the track. The dude that you followed from 7 years ago.
You know
who it is?
I don't know. I don't know if you know. You might know him because since then he's been in all kinds of like shit. So his name's Cal Wayne. He's from Houston.
What's his last name?
Wayne.
I don't know if I do, man. I don't know if I've heard that dude. You have to send me some.
Definitely be checking him out now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he. You know, I fuck with it. Like he's a street cat who's like passionate about the shit he does, and he has a nice little melody to his shit. So you know, I fuck with it. I rock with him.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I'm gonna let you go. Everybody, obviously, go take a listen to Macro Dosing from Mr. Foster and PFT Commenter. At Barstool Sports, coming out every Tuesday. First episode covers Alex Jones. And as we said, Bohemia coming in the next couple months from Bobby Fino.
Yeah, man.
So make sure when it drops, we'll put stuff up on social too whenever you put the album out.
I appreciate it.
And I'll be jamming it from now till then. So we appreciate you taking the time today, Arian. Thank you very, very much. A pleasure as always. The conversation gets better every single time, man. It means a lot.
My man. I appreciate you having me on, brother.
Hey, you have a great rest of your Monday. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir.
Peace. So go follow Arian Foster, a.k.a. Bobby Fino, everywhere. Subscribe to Macro Dosing. Look out for episode 2 on Flat Earthers later this week. I personally cannot wait.
I can't either.
To listen to PFT and Arian discuss Kyrie Irving and Flat Earthers all over the place. Also look out for another album from Bobby Fino in the next couple months, Bohemia. And just get out there and try to change the world for the better this week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. That'll do it for today's show. But before you head out to take on the world, it's time for some very important announcements. First and foremost, you've been saddled with 3 legal obligations as a result of having listened to this entire podcast, the first of which you must rate and review. Then you can check that box and move on to number 2. Share the show with one person this week, a friend, a family member, a coworker, any one individual that you think would enjoy the Ross Bolin podcast. Share it with them. Send them this episode. Send them this episode. Share this episode with a friend, family member, a coworker, or a neighbor that you think would enjoy it, and boom, that's your second legal ob. Check that box and move on to your third and final one, which is to support our sponsors who support us and keep us in business today. You got 4. Talkspace.com, code RBP. MyBookie.ag, code RBP. GetQuip.com/RBP. And of course, ShipStation.com, code Ross. So support our sponsors. Check that box. I can call off the dogs. We don't have to see each other in court, and we can all live long and prosper. 3 legal obligations. Fulfill them all. Huzzah. We have social medias, believe it or not. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. I am at WR Bolin, at WRBOLEN. The show, The Ross Bolin Podcast, is on Instagram, at The Ross Bolin Podcast, on Twitter, at Ross Bolin Pod, Facebook.com/Ross Bolin Podcast. Mr. Christopher, where can we follow you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at ChrisSC99 and on Twitter at Q0ULS.
O-N?
No. Q0ULS?
Oh, yeah. Coles.
I mean, I can change it to Q0ULSON.
No, you don't have to do that.
Thank God.
You don't have to.
I wasn't going to do it.
By the way, speaking of which, when it comes to Instagram, we told y'all last week, but continue tagging us in your stories. Anytime you put up an Instagram story related to RBP or any of the content we do here, maybe it's that you love today's episode and you put up a picture of us from YouTube with Arian Foster. Tag us, and we will share your story on our Instagram, therefore
expanding
all of our
horizons. Yeah,
indeed.
Exactly. We're
sure.
Quickly realizing that a large group of our audience watches our show in very obscure places, and if you're one of those people, we would love to see where you watch the show.
Yeah, like,
so send it in.
We had a teacher that was playing their show on like the big screen in an auditorium that was empty. We've had people working at coffee shops or gas stations or bodegas or even recently a dispensary where they put the show on the loudspeakers and on the screens inside of their place of business. It's usually not the owner, it's an employee that I have to imagine later on down the road gets fired for this, but still, it's beautiful.
It is.
It's beautiful, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we will record your journey to being fired to help you out when you go to court.
We'll document it.
Because we have the lawyers. We know you're fulfilling your legal obs. We have our lawyer team to back you up. Don't worry.
That's absolutely correct. So tag us on Instagram at The Ross Bolin Podcast and all your posts. Check out Bolin Media's television and film podcast, Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Available wherever you listen to RBP. You can listen to OCC, as it's called. If you love TV and movies, you will love Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Available wherever you listen to RBP. And that will do it for RBP 376, produced by Mike Moody Garcia of Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. Chris and I will be back on Wednesday for another episode. And then, of course, Friday, ad-free on patreon.com/Ross Bolin Podcast. Make sure you get in there, support the show, and remember, you are not alone. Podmen get paid. Respect Mr. Park. Strength and honor. Gang, gang, gang. Christopher,
peace be with you.
And also with you.
Go low, baby.